The Brad Sesmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Great Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We have a busy show on tap. Larry Fitzgerald Sr. will be with us. Why can't your son quit playing out in the grass? Why can't your son find something else to do with his time? I think those are pretty basic questions that you ask the dad of somebody who keeps playing ball for 16 years. So we'll have Larry Fitzgerald Sr. with us, longtime Twin City sports media member, on his son getting a one-year deal, according to Ian Rapoport, 1 year, $11 million with some guarantees thrown in there. And that's what it's been. It's been $11 million for the last few years, if we're to believe all the reports around what a contract is worth. We are not surprised by this, by the way, but it is nice to have Larry back in an offense with Cliff Kingsbury. I think for me, and we'll get further into this in a bit, but the idea that if Larry were to come here and come back with Steve Wilks still here, defensive-minded guy, team heading nowhere fast, offensive coordinator, you know, Byron Leftwich leaves to go to Bruce, all this uncertainty, I think this is good news. Casey Jacobson is going to be with us today. Tonight is a big night for Arizona State and U of A. Both of them are in Los Angeles. U of A plays early against USC, and ASU plays at 9 tonight against the Bruins. I think I'm going to make it to the end of that one. I think it's an FS1 game. That's why we're having Casey on, Eric. It's FS1, right? So I'll make it to the end of that one. Sometimes I'm watching ASU at 10:45, 11 o'clock. It's just not happening. It's not me getting old. It's just me looking at it saying I can find out, just DVR and watch it back. So I'll have Casey with us. We'll also talk with Casey about the Suns. The arena deal did get pushed through. What a bleep show that was yesterday. Larry Naaman shows up, the guy that shot Mary Rose Wilcox in the butt. He shows up and, like, nobody knows. Eric, did you see that Jordan was live tweeting from that event yesterday when Larry Naaman showed up? I mean, it was fascinating.
Yeah, I wasn't totally following his tweets, but I did see that he was out there. So
Jordan went and stood in line to go into the court, I don't know if it was a courtroom or chambers or whatever it was, but he was in there. You remember Larry Naaman's name? Does that ring a bell back in the day? You remember when Mary Rose got shot in the butt, right? Were you even here yet? I think you might have been just graduating. You might
not
have been.
Really. I don't remember it. So okay. I might have been out of state.
So this guy shot Mary Rose Wilcox in the ass. And it was funny at the time for some people, but somebody getting shot by somebody is no laughing matter, right? And so he served time. He shows up yesterday at this meeting and speaks. And Jordan is live tweeting about it. I sent him a note. I said, what a bleep show this is. You're down there with him?
Did you assign him to that?
No,
he just did it. Yeah.
He just did. Jordan yesterday did like three things. What do you mean, do I assign him? What are you talking about? Do I assign Devin or you or?
You actually do assign us
when?
Stuff.
When?
Like, hey, this is going on.
You might want to do
Hey, if I get forwarded emails from you, that means, hey, keep this on your radar. Although 99.9% of the time I get the same email that
you already know it.
So.
Did you get that one I sent you yesterday about the
workout? I did, and I have no interest in doing
it. Yeah,
so.
I don't think so. We get stuff sent to us. I got one this morning.
We have to pick and choose. No offense to those people that send us stuff. Thank you for doing it.
It's fine.
But we're a small staff, and we just need to be, I don't know,
nimble,
particular about the things that we cover.
Or
we'd be working 24/7.
Oh, wait, we do that. Or
not really.
Or we've done the story already.
Yes.
We've done it recently. So it's not, we don't blow you guys off. It's
like, just, if said establishment would have said player from said Scottsdale High School that played at said Pac-12 school that's going to be
a first-round pick,
that's going to be rich in a few months.
What does that do if he's going to be rich? What if he's going to be poor?
Maybe we'd be more apt to go cover the event, but since said player is not there and there are other said players that are going to be there that
don't
quite attract said attention, we might just pass on it.
Are you sure that he's at that place?
I'm sure he's not at that place.
Okay. Yeah, we're talking about Byron Murphy, by the way. So we just let people know. Goody's going to be on board today. What did he tell you that he wants to talk about?
I don't know. It's on the rundown.
I see it on the rundown. He wants to talk about Savannah
Guthrie. He didn't screen
any
movies because he didn't do that anymore. He didn't really, I don't know.
What do you mean he doesn't do it anymore? Then why do we call Goody at the movies?
Well, I shouldn't say he doesn't do it. He just didn't screen it. And he kind of told me a text that this is kind of just a dry spell for movies anyway. This little three-week window.
I'm going to hammer him then. Because he wants to talk about Savannah Guthrie's interview.
Yeah, which is okay.
It's fine. It's been done. I think I want to know
the reaction. Then we can talk about something else.
Well, I want to know his reaction to his column last week about great broadcasters.
And Tony Romo, and how Tony Romo knew all the plays that were being called before they were being run last week for the Patriots, which I thought was amusing.
Do you think Chris Collinsworth gets any flack from his superior saying, why are you not like Tony Romo? You know, Tony Romo's on the number one team with NBC, so the number one team at
CBS.
Or CBS, I'm sorry. The number one team at Fox. Do you think Troy Aikman gets any flack from his producer saying, hey, why are you not doing what Tony Romo is doing?
I don't think so. I think all three of them are good for different reasons.
Collinsworth wears these sweaters now. He doesn't wear ties anymore.
I mean, he's...
And he has the slide.
He's hated by some, but, like, I don't know. I think he's fine, so...
I think he's fine. You know, the deal with Joe Buck and Aikman, it's fine. There's very few broadcasters, because to sit here and hate on broadcasters, like, come on. We're brought to you by Sagicor Now. Protect what matters most. That means you do it with life insurance or annuities. I was sitting with someone the other day at Sagicor, because I have my license now. I believe so strongly in them, and they're a part of what we do. And they said, you might want to consider this. It's something good to have. And so I picked it up. Got it. I shouldn't say pick it up. It's not like walking in. It takes work. So I got my license. So I'm able to sit and visit with people about their personal situations with their finances. It doesn't matter your age. It doesn't matter if you're in your early 20s or if you're in your 90s. It doesn't matter. Protect what matters most. Know where you're going, what the path is taking you. I sat with a couple that's starting to look at retirement. And they're very close to the retirement space. And they're just trying to get themselves organized. It's smart. It's very smart. What about you? When was the last time you just sat and said, here's where I'm going, here's what I'm doing, here's what I have? Does it make any sense? I'm looking at doing planned giving with colleges. It's a very smart space to be in. So there's a lot there with Sagicor. Log on, get your free quote at Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. That is with Sagicor. We appreciate their support. Larry Fitzgerald Sr. in a few minutes. So some things happened in my life in the last couple of days since I've been here on the show. And you guys know that through the years, I have no problem being like, here's some things going on that I think are topical, things that you go through, I go through, or that you may never have gone through, and just to know what's happening. My youngest son is getting into wrestling. It's wrestling season. He's a water polo kid. He's going to do football. He's a big kid. He's 14. He's got facial hair. He's got sideburns. He's a hairy mess. Those of you that have had eighth grade smelly 14-year-olds, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So he has his first wrestling match. I'm excited. I'm geeked. Get done with work. Make sure that I'm there to be that dad. You know, want to be at everything. Haven't missed any of his events. It's part of the reason why I started doing this, just to be a better dad, better husband. And my wife gets a call as we're driving to the school. And I hear him say, the referee just told me I cannot wrestle because I have too much hair on my face. I cannot have these sideburns, so they're telling me I can't wrestle. This is his 14-year-old voice, and me as the dad, like, you got to be kidding me. You got to be bleeping kidding me. So I pull up to the gym, drop my wife off, said, go be Mama Bear. Go find out what goes on. And I hightail it out of there. I go to the closest store. I run in. I get a little travel Barbasol thing. I get a little travel razor. I race back because the match is supposed to start at 4:30. And I don't want him to be put in harm's way. And my wife comes out and says, okay, as long as he's clean shaven, he's good to go. So guys, dads, if you're giving your first lesson to your son on how to shave, it shouldn't be in an eighth grade locker room, smelly, messy eighth graders all running around. But that's what went down with me. And he was laughing about it. He says, now I have a great story to tell my kids down the road. So I'm lathering him up, trying to shave him without nicking him, because if he's bleeding, then he won't be able to wrestle. And I don't want to be that dad that the story went really bad and dad nicked me and I was bleeding and I couldn't wrestle. So I shave him clean. And he goes out there and he wins. He gets a pin, gets another victory. It's a great night all the way around. I pick him up after the last, or we walk out of the gym after the last match. He's like, man, I got so many stories to tell my kids now. They have this chain, like the Miami Hurricanes had the touchdown chain. They have this Colt chain for a pin. It's a pin chain. So he's wearing it around his neck walking out. He's all that, clean shaven. It was cool. My mom lost her dog. Guys, there's going to come a space in your life when your mom, if she's by herself and her dog passes away, where all hell breaks loose. It's coming. So I've had to deal with that in the last 24 hours in a good way. It's trying to handle these things that come along. So the sports part of it, yeah, I'm pumped up, psyched up to talk to Larry Fitzgerald Sr. next. That'll be fun. Casey Jacobson and Goody at the Movies. We have a fun show on tap. But there are things that go on in life. And if it's like the Ferris Bueller line, you know, if you go too fast, you're going to miss what's coming. So make sure you slow down a little bit. Larry Fitzgerald Sr. is next. I'm Brad Sussmat. At Cardinal games, it's fun to sit with in the same row as Larry Fitzgerald Sr. because he is really into all the games and he's just fun to talk to. There was a moment, though, this year in the Rams game where Larry on the field got exposed, like up high, and Aqib Talib could have really damaged him, in my opinion. And Fitz Sr. reacted with hands on head as the pass was being thrown. I don't know, Mr. Fitz, if you remember that play or not. But it was one of those moments, and it sticks with me how through the years we've seen you at Cardinal games, and it's a pleasure to have you back on board with us.
Well, thank you very much. Good to be with you. And, yeah, it's always been a treat to, over the last, 15 years to cover about Cardinal games and to witness, you know, what happens in those games. And you're right. There's been a moment or two during Larry's career where something happens and you really get caught in the moment, and you're literally waiting to know and see if he gets up. You know what I mean? It just it's been, and that was one of those times where you I was frightened. I really was.
Yeah, I mean, you're a dad, and you're a journalist, and the dad part, in my view, always supersedes anything else going on, and it's just been fun to see you through the years, and we're going to see you for another season now, because Larry just can't quit playing ball. He just cannot stop playing. Were you surprised by this bit of news?
I have to say yes, because, you know, got to consider this. 4 years ago, one of the best agents, I think, in American history is Eugene Parker. Mm. He's represented Emmitt Smith, Deion Sanders, and I can go on and on and on that list.
Yep.
Over the years. And I remember signing him to represent Larry back in 2003 for the draft. When Larry was a sophomore coming out of the University of Pittsburgh, I must have interviewed 50 agents. Hmm. Well, you know, he died 4 years ago.
Right.
And so since that time, Larry has basically become his own agent. He hasn't replaced him. And so that's why in the situation over the last few years, when his contracts have been sort of one-year deals, it's been sort of this, he could retire. He could come back next year. We don't know. That really is why the situation is like it is, and you don't really know if this is his last game or his last season, because he's been representing himself, and he's taken it upon himself to, at the end of each year, look at the season, gauge it, and determine if he still has a desire to play again.
Does he ask you what you think?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we go into it before actually the season, and we lay out what his mission is, what his goal is, you know, and I ask him what he thinks of his team's potential, and then I tell him what I think based on, you know, the salary cap. Everybody's cap number is the same. And then I look at you know, what I see in terms of what I witness in camp and what I've seen in the preseason. And so we sort of gauge it, and then we kind of, you know, see how it's going. And I wanted to know at the end of this season, because it was such a rough season, did this weigh any more on him than other years? And he said it did. And so that's why I was surprised to a degree that he decided that he's going to play another season.
Talk with Larry Fitzgerald Sr. Do you have these conversations as the season progresses, like any dad would have with his son, whether it's in high school after the game is over in the car, or in the college setting or in the professional setting? Or do you leave him some space and start up maybe in December? How does that work?
Oh, I leave him the space. After every game, you know, you go down to the locker room.
Right.
I do listen to the press conference or news conference from the head coach, and then we go and visit with various players who had an impact or on the game and that type of thing. And so it's usually it's between that time and then having dinner later where we, you know, assess what happened in the game. But then when the season's over, you know, you pretty much just let him, you know, just get it out of his system, you know, and that type of thing. And that's how it's been, you know, since the end of this season. And as you know, a lot has transpired since the end of this season. This is the second time in 2 years he's going to be playing for a first-year head coach, another offensive coordinator. I mean, just a whole new scheme. You know, last year the general manager being suspended. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that went into last year that had an impact on the season and obviously ultimately an impact on how he is utilized and how the Cardinals proceed. And so I just try to make him aware of everything from not just a father's standpoint, but from a business standpoint and from an overview.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I, you know, sort of talk about this and talk about that, and then I let him say, okay, I'm going back to Minneapolis, and, you know, let's touch bases, you know, when you figure out what it is you're going to do. But you know what? I think it had something to do with that hole-in-one he had with President Obama.
Yeah.
That must have lit the fuse in him because, you know, when he came back, he wanted to play.
So before that, and I was going to ask you about that. So before the hole in one, he's up in the air. After the hole in one, he's laser focused and ready to go. Is that how it went down?
I believe it was. I just think something
went,
lit up in him that, you know, I've never had a hole in one.
Me either.
I've had a couple of Eagles.
Yeah.
But never a hole in one, and he's made one with me. And I can't tell you, it was so exciting for me to be with him, to see him make a hole-in-one. I couldn't even finish my round, you know. So I can't imagine what it's like when you have one on your own.
Yeah.
But that had to really be special to have one with the president, man. I just can't. I mean, I can't even fathom that.
A couple other questions I'll let you go, and I appreciate the time. Larry Fitzgerald Sr. with us. Cliff Kingsbury, if he's not coach, if Steve Wilks is here and there's not changes to the staff, do you think Larry feels differently? Kingsbury's an offensive guy, wide open offense. This isn't really aimed at Wilks per se. Maybe it's the coordinators is the better question. But do you think the addition of Kingsbury as coach and potentially the numbers that could be put up played in part of his thought?
Well, I don't think Larry's looking at numbers, but I do think looking at things from a fresh start standpoint in terms of a new head coach, new offensive coordinator, a new direction, you know, all of those things, you know, they're weighted and measured. And I cannot say that I don't think that had an impact also on his decision to say this can be done. Also, it took some convincing, I believe, that, you know, when you're talking to a visionary, and in this case, the new head football coach, he's trying to sell you on how he sees you in his system and
sure.
how you in his system can help him achieve what he ultimately wants to do, and that's to win as the new head coach of the Arizona Cardinals.
No, I agree with you on that. And it also would say that Larry believes in Josh Rosen, that Josh Rosen can get the job done too. And not that there wouldn't be any reason to believe that, but Josh did get run over this season. He had his ups and downs, as most rookie quarterbacks do.
No doubt. And to Josh's credit, he was a professional all the way, even though he was a first-year quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe any quarterback should have to deal with what he had to deal with this season. And that's just my view. And I've seen many first-year quarterbacks play over the years. And I'm from the Dennis Green school of how you deal with quarterbacks. I remember when he drafted Dante Culpepper, first round. Dante didn't play his first year.
Right.
Not at all. But he gave him the keys, as Denny would say, to the car to drive the offense in his second year. And Dante became one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Just lighting it up, getting the ball to Randy Moss and that type of thing, Chris Carter and that offense. But in this case, we had a young man basically thrown into the fire, third or fourth week of the season. Injuries in the offensive line. We knew his starting center was out for the entire year going into camp. And so it was just, I mean, he was learning every week, man. People throwing all these different defenses at him and coverages. And it was really rough. And I still look back and say, man, they were this close. A missed field goal here or there to having maybe 5-6 wins. Right. And even had those things happen, it was still a tough season. But I think Rosen can be a big-time quarterback in the National Football League if he's got the right people around him.
You've covered the NFL a long time, and the Cardinals have the number one overall pick. As you sit there in the journalist side, what should they do? As you sit there as the dad of a star wide receiver, what should they do?
I'll say, again, Dennis Green was one of my best friends. I did radio with him for 9 years. Yeah. I love his approach and his ability of putting the team together from a management standpoint. I saw him manage the Vikings. They were 15-1, scored 560 points like that Kansas City team that should have been in the Super Bowl or could have been. And I remember his approach to the draft has always been best player available. Regardless of what that position is, the best player available. And so I think when you get in the position of being number one overall, you got to take advantage of it from the standpoint of you got to be in the mindset of you have to make certain that your organization gets the best player, period. Regardless of what his position is. And so when people say quarterback is the most important position, there's a difference between important and the best player. And so if the Cardinals are able to differentiate that, I think they'll go about doing what's best for the Cardinals.
If Kyler Murray's the number one best player on their board and Joey Bosa's number two, it's really interesting because Rosen is established to me this year. And I came from San Diego. I hosted Denny's radio show for years when he was at Stanford. So I know exactly what you're saying. Bobby Bethard poured into me and he had the number one and he missed on occasion. But his view was always trade back to accumulate more wealth, not necessarily best pick. Everybody sees it differently, though.
Right. That is an interesting analogy. And there's no perfect, you know, system.
Right,
I mean,
right.
You look at the New England Patriots. I mean, they got some guy named Tom Brady. He was a sixth-round pick.
Right.
But now we know him as the greatest of all time because he's not only been in a system that has taken advantage of his skill set, but he has found a way as a player to grow up dreaming about being Joe Montana. And he carried that with him. And he went to Michigan and got all that he could out of that time, but he never forgot his dream. And we're seeing that dream fulfilled week in and week out because he's got, 29 playoff wins in his career more than some organizations have had in their entire lifetime.
All right, let's make a deal. Next time you come on, get your hole in one out of the way, okay? Just enough of this. Enough of this that your son is beating you badly on the scoreboard of hole in ones. How's that for a deal?
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. I really have tried. I've been close, but I just can't seem to get that ball in the hole.
Always good to talk to you, Mr. Fitz. Thanks.
Thank you.
Sorry, Fitzgerald Sr. there. Good stuff. Casey Jacobson on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat. Looking forward to tonight out in Los Angeles with both ASU and U of A in action. Casey Jacobson is with us to talk further about that. FS1 Pac-12 Network college basketball analyst. I have been watching Casey, and a lot of the shows that Casey has been a part of is revolved around the idea that the Pac-12 sucks and the Pac-12 blows, right, Casey? But it's really not that bad. If we get through December and here into January, it's a competitive conference. It's going to get more than one team in, I would think. But it felt like early in the year, the conversation was, man, this is not good.
No doubt. Well, Brad, first of all, it's great to be on with you. Your vocab is a little bit different than the vocabulary that I used on FS1. I wouldn't go that far on air and say it sucks. But there is no way to dress it up that the Pac-12 is down this year. That's what I say.
Down. Down.
And that's okay. Yeah, down. It's okay to say that. As an analyst, I have to be honest.
Yes.
I can't just pretend that the conference is on the same level as the other power conferences, which is not. But there's been some conversation that they might just get one tournament team in. And although I guess it's a possibility, it's highly unlikely that that's going to happen.
Right.
The last time the conference had just two teams was in 2012. If some Pac-12 fans remember, that was the year that Lorenzo Romo was still coaching the Washington Huskies, and they won the regular season with a 14-4 conference record and did not qualify for the NCAA tournament because of their horrible non-conference schedule. And Colorado and Cal were the only two representatives in the NCAA tournament that year. I think it is possible that only two teams get in, but I think a more likely scenario is three. And I think we're already starting to see some of that separation.
Right.
I do think that Washington is the best team in the conference, but it's not by a wide margin. Let's not get that twisted. I don't think Washington is clearly above everybody, but I do think it's their conference to win or lose. I think Arizona will be absolutely in the mix. They're not, you know, they don't have a dearth of talent, but they certainly have some guys that can play. They have a home court advantage, and they get after you. They play hard. And I would say the same for Arizona State. Arizona State is the team, to me, that should win the conference. I think they are more talented than Arizona. They are more talented than Washington. But they're young in spots. They play young. They're Jekyll and Hyde to me. So I'm not ready to put Arizona State up there as the team to beat.
Would you put Oregon in that mix? I just saw them here. ASU took them apart. But would you put Oregon in that mix or not?
I would not put Oregon in that mix. I think Oregon's going to have a hard time even cracking the top four this year. They just, for two reasons. First and foremost, they lost Bol Bol. And although I wouldn't say that Bol Bol would have been the savior for their program. He's a one and done. He's only going to be here for 1 year. He only played 9 games before breaking his foot, and he's now out for the rest of the year. But he made them so much more dangerous. That's the reason one. Reason number two is Peyton Pritchard, to me, is a very good college basketball player. But as analysts, we often tend to give the benefit of the doubt to returning players. Like, hey, this guy had a really good sophomore year. He's ready to be a star in his junior year. That's sometimes not the case. Sometimes guys aren't ready to take a team on their back. Some guys aren't ready to be stars, and that's okay. Peyton Pritchard is one of those guys to me, a really good college point guard who I think a lot of the Pac-12 schools would love to have as their starter. But if he is your best player or even your second best player, I don't know if you can be an elite team. And this isn't a knock on Peyton. It's just who he is. If you're going to win a conference like the Pac-12, which annually puts players into the NBA every single season, you're going to have a hard time he's not capable of dropping 25 at a moment's notice. He's a really good, you know, setup point guard and a guy that can hit threes when given time. So because of those two reasons, I don't think Oregon has enough firepower to match Washington, Arizona State, and Arizona.
Casey Jacobson with us, FS1. You're doing the game tonight, right? You're not in studio?
Correct.
Wow.
I am doing the Arizona State at UCLA game for Fox Sports 1 tonight.
Yeah, yeah. All right, what are your keys to the game? Let's just walk you through the production meeting.
Sure. So Arizona State is a Jekyll and Hyde team. I think that they have the potential to be the best defensive team, and that's what their head coach Bobby Hurley has said before the season started, every single week that they've played this year, that they want to hang their hat on the defensive end in rebounding. Now, they've been one of the best rebounding teams, not just in the Pac-12, but in the nation.
Right.
So they got that checked. But defensively, Brad, they've been so all over the map. It's hard for me to believe. Now, in their four Pac-12 wins, Arizona State has only given up 65 points per game, which is really good. In their two losses in Pac-12 play, they've given up 91 on average to Stanford and Utah, who are two teams that do not score typically in that area. So to me, it's like, is Arizona State going to be ready to play from the jump on the road? And road games have been really difficult for this program in the past. As good as Bobby Hurley has done, and he's done a fantastic job in turning this program around, they're just 8-21 in road games in Pac-12 road games in his tenure. Mm. So that's something to it's just been a tripwire for them that they haven't been able to navigate through. And the other thing I'll say about Arizona State is the problem with them offensively is their two lead guards, Brad. Their two lead guards are Lou Dort and Remy Martin. Neither one of them shoot over 40%. From the field overall.
It's been painful. It's been painful to watch them at guard play. That's been my whole thing, is they're fun in spurts. I would like to see a true point guard. I would like to see a true offensive machine, which Dort was early. Remy was coming off the foot injury. But watching them, Casey, the last few weeks at times, it's like dental surgery with no Novocaine. It's hard.
They force things way too often. And I've mentioned this to Bobby Hurley before. I'm not a coach, and I'm not going to tell him how to do his job, but I do often ask him, like, I think you might give these guys a little bit too much freedom. I mean, they're allowed to just dribble through double teams and force contested 19-foot pull-up fadeaways. And Bobby Hurley rarely says anything. Now, he did bench both of those players that I mentioned after the Utah loss. They both came off the bench, and they both play pretty well. So he has tried to hold them accountable. But you know what's interesting is I think Zylan Cheatham has developed and risen as the best player on the team to me. He's the most consistent performer with his energy level. He's a fantastic two-way forward. He plays defense, and he's versatile. He can guard a center. He can switch off on a pick and roll and keep a guard in front. He's also been one of their better, like, point guards, if I could say that, at times. He's a very good facilitator.
Yep.
So I like what I've seen from Zylan. Now, you asked me about the other side, UCLA. They have been a roller coaster, would be even more so than Arizona State, if Devils fans can believe that. I mean, after they fired Steve Alford, they win three games in a row. Then they lose two games in a row. And so they're still searching for themselves. And just like I mentioned with Remy Martin and Lou Dort, their lead guard, Jalen Hands, also only shoots 38% from the field. And he shoots the second most shots on the team behind Chris Wilkes. So, look, like, you can't be a consistently good offensive team, especially in crunch time, if your best player or the guy that has the ball in your hands, in his hands the most, is the worst shooter on the team. So something has to give. UCLA's got to figure out a way to share the wealth. Prince Ali, their junior shooting guard, has been one of their better performers. Maybe they can get him going. Because I do think that this game is going to come down to the final possessions tonight. So how will both teams execute? Will they get good shots? And who will be taking those shots is something to keep an eye on.
All right. I got about a minute. I have two things. They got to be really quick. U of A,
okay.
I think it's one of Sean's better coaching jobs, to be honest with you, to where they are. And are you going to be in Vegas, the Pac-12 tournament?
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to be in Vegas?
Oh, yeah. I'm covering the first 2 days of studio for Pac-12 Network.
In Vegas?
Yes.
All right. So we'll see you in Vegas. That's good. And then B, what's going on with Sean and the job he's doing?
I would agree. It's one of his better coaching jobs. And what does that mean? It means he's getting the most out of his least talented team. That's what we'd really define as good coaching jobs. We rarely ever give the coaching job to somebody who has, you know, three lottery picks on their team. We give the coach of the year to somebody who has lost some players or, you know, doesn't have the talent that they normally have and yet still have figured out a way to get his team competitive. Brandon Randolph is a good player. Like, he doesn't get a ton of credit. He's a good player. Brandon Williams has been up and down. I get it, but he's also a good player. And Chase Jeter is one of the better big guys. So he doesn't have, like, nobody on his team, but he's gotten this team to buy in on the defensive end, and they share the ball. Plus, they have home court advantage, which is a lot in a conference that doesn't have a lot of venues that are intimidating to play in. So expect Arizona to be at the top, and no one's going to want to play them in Las Vegas in March.
All right. Make sure you make the right tie selection tonight. No maroon and gold. No UCLA blue and gold.
I'm going pink and purple.
Pink and purple. We will be watching tonight. You know, wink at us. Have a good night. Thanks for being with us.
You got it. Thanks, Brad. Have a good week, man.
You as well. It's always good to catch up with Casey Jacobson. I like him. He does a really good job. Like, Eric, when he was with the Suns, we felt like he had a future. But to see him now where he's doing studio and he's doing games, like, he's a riser. He's like Brock.
Yeah, he's just,
you know, a little bit like Brock.
He's very good, and he's very versatile. He's just as good calling a game as he is sitting at a table in a studio and analyzing other games.
I guess I can't use the word sucks with him, though, when talking about teams.
I guess not.
But it's fine.
But he's a good guy.
He is a great guy.
He's
we love
guy.
Having Casey.
Known for years. So.
Yeah. All right. Goody at the movies, although he hasn't seen a movie. He's got some other stuff. That's next. Stay with us. Now, because we've had a fun show with Larry Fitzgerald Sr. and Casey Jacobson, the cherry on top is Goody. It's good to catch up with Bill Goodykunz, Goody at the Movies, and other stuff, AZ Central, Gannett Chief Film and Media Critic. What's new on your end? Looks like lots, actually, but what's new?
I'm often referred to as the cherry on top, I think.
What does your wife refer to you as? What does your wife call you?
Not that.
That's good.
I realize that when I talk inside, my dog whines and everything, so I always sort of walk out in the backyard, and I realize I probably should have worn shoes today. It's a little nippy out here. Weather forecasting, not one of my things. No, yeah, there's a lot going on. I've been writing a lot about some of the media stuff, and I did some sports stuff, and I'm going to do some more sports stuff, and I'm really looking forward to that. Busy but fun busy.
What sports stuff? I know you did the column last week on the announcers. Did you do the Romo story? I just saw the headline on that.
I did not. I would love to have, but somebody I'm sort of picking up some things where I can with sports, and that I would gladly give up. I don't dislike Romo the way some people do, and I don't love him the way other people do, but that said, that the thing he did during the last couple of drives there, that was pretty amazing.
Every play.
I know that's not breaking new ground or anything, but man, and it was, and he was so giddy about it. He could not have been happier. He was just like, "Oh, this is what they're going to do." And you know what was it? What I don't think anybody, I've really seen anybody say this, but I think this is one of the things that makes it, that does make him pretty likable, is that he never said, "I told you so." He never came back and said, "Well, that's, just like I called it," or anything
right,
like that. He
right.
just went on to the next one. It was just like, that's my job. I did it, and now I'm going to keep doing it. So good for him. Jim Nance has not grown on me over the years, but that's okay.
What I'm wondering, I asked Eric this on the air earlier, is do you think that Troy Aikman and Chris Collinsworth are feeling any sort of heat from producers to say, look at all the attention Tony Romo is getting, and guys, give us a little bit more than the standard stuff?
I'll say this. I don't know either one of them. I've been around Collinsworth a little bit, but not in any way, shape, or form to really talk to him in any meaningful way or anything. But I don't get the impression that either of those guys suffer from small egos. I think that they think pretty highly of themselves. And that's how you get those kind of jobs, by the way. I mean, you know, that, all those guys, Collinsworth in particular, you know, strikes me as the kind of guy that knows he's the smartest guy in the room and doesn't, you know, and will never fail to tell you. But he does do a lot more than I think Aikman does. Aikman is fine. He's pretty bland. But he doesn't really do anything more than the standard, you know, ex-player, you know, well, I think this, and I think, you know. Collinsworth has, I still don't understand how this isn't a conflict of interest. He has that company, that statistics company, that he, you know, he at least once a game refers to. But he does kind of go down into, you know, into at least some analytical stuff. I mean, and that's not Romo's strong suit. Romo is, you know, just this guy that pays a lot of attention and watches. I heard from some people at CBS that said the thing with him is his preparation. Mm-hmm. And he, like, really pays attention. And he really, and that's how he does it. And you would think that, I mean, how many hours a week do quarterbacks watch film, you know, so that they can anticipate defenses and coverages and stuff? So, you know, I mean, I think that's what's going on here.
We're talking with Goody at the Movies. Savannah Guthrie, let's switch over. Her interview has gotten a lot of attention, a lot, and you've written about it quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, she interviewed the kid from Covington High School or Covington Catholic or whatever, and who's, of course, in the middle of the thing on the Lincoln Memorial, and they... You know, they talk about she shouldn't have interviewed. The left says she should not have interviewed him in the first place because she's just giving him a format to, you know, to or a platform to continue to lie and to make excuses for himself. And I don't know if he's lying or not, but he certainly did make excuses for himself. And you know, being smug is not a crime for which he can be very grateful. But I think also, you know, the people on the right say, well, how dare you? You're just falling into this false narrative. He didn't really do anything. It's one of those things where you can look at all sorts of videos, and you really can sort of – you can find what you want to find in there. But you have to ignore some other stuff to find what you want to find. I mean, you know, and it's the way that we are right now. And everybody's slamming Savannah Guthrie, and, I, you know, she's – don't get me wrong. This was not great moments in journalism. She was not Mike Wallace, you know, on 60 Minutes, like drilling down on this kid or anything. Or on Phillips, the Native American man, who's I think they interviewed for the third time today. But I think you gotta do it. You gotta get people on the record. You gotta, you know, if he's gonna go, if he's let him say what he's gonna say. Certainly, grill him on it if you want. I mean, you know, if there are clear factual errors in what he's saying, call him on it. But at least I don't think you turn down the interview. I mean, do you turn down the biggest interview of the year so far? I don't think so.
Did you let me switch gears here before we get you out of here from that to the Suns arena vote yesterday? And the guy that shot Mary Rose in the ass shows up. And I'm just like, what a bleep show this is. Come on.
He doesn't just show up. He speaks.
He speaks.
And then when they say, oh, we're sorry that you have to hear this, he says, she deserved it.
Yeah.
Our
state, Bill, our state has more shining moments nationally of just what is going on out there in state 48. It just doesn't matter if it's Joe Arpaio or down the list of things. Like, come on, how does this happen?
I'd say Florida might give us a run for their money, but here
we're either one or 1A. Okay,
I'll tell you this though. You certainly can't say that we don't have free speech in Arizona.
Yeah, that's right.
If they let this clown get up there. And I mean, that was – the thing that's weird about that, of course, is that it's – yes, you have a right to free speech. But if you feel like you're endangering or something, you know, it's the classic thing. You can't yell fire in a theater, in a crowded theater. I mean, that to me, it struck me a little weird that somebody didn't say, you know, look, we can't have this guy here.
Yeah, we can't have him here. All right. I'll let you go off that. I'll see you soon. Thanks.
All right.
See ya. It's good to eat the movies. Devin Henry is our chairman of the board. Devin also, I don't know if you guys have gone online to see some of Devin's work. It's okay. But you can check it out online, Sports360AZ. It's actually really good. It's just part of what we do here. Eric, as always, the senior executive vice president of Everything or Nothing. Thanks again to Larry Fitzgerald Sr., Casey Jacobson, and Bill Goodykoontz. If you missed any part of it, it re-airs for the next 24 hours. We are self-funded. That means the commercials that you see, these people believe enough in us to say, we want to support you financially. So please support them. We appreciate their support. Have yourself a great day.